Regent Moran?
That we did for unusual activity.
Regent Page?
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you, ma'am. Just a reminder, I heard some background noise just a second ago. If you're not speaking, can you please put yourself on mute? I know sometimes when we log in, it automatically has us not on mute. We can all make that mistake, but let's try to correct it now. Thank you. Let's start out with public comment. Do we have any public comment?
There is none.
There's no public comment. Just as a reminder, because this is a virtual meeting, we have adapted our policies for public comment and asked that they be submitted in advance. Those procedures can be found on our website, but none has been submitted. So we will move on to item number two, consent items. Do we have a motion?
So moved. This is Regent Carvalho.
Second, Regent Page.
Regent Page. Any discussion about the consent agenda? Nope. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Regent Page, you got a vote on this? It's just the three of us, right?
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
You're
item
welcome.
Item number three, fourth quarter fiscal year 2019-2020 fiscal exceptions report. It's for information only. I think I had some questions on this as I look at my notes, but does anybody else want to start out? No other questions? Then I'll, as I was looking through this, I noticed if there's someone there from UNR and UNLV, I'm going to have some questions for you.
This is Mark Johnson. I'm here.
Thank you, President Johnson. The first thing I noticed was the, obviously some of the stuff we've talked about many times before, and one, I want to appreciate that UNR is addressing the UNR Fire Science Academy debt, which we've had on the books for a long time.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, if I could comment on that, I just moments ago, I signed a purchase and sale agreement for the Nelson building worth $4.8 million. So I think next time you will see the Fire Science Academy absent from this list.
Well, President Johnson, next time will be my last meeting, and I would be so happy to have a meeting without having that on our report. So thank you. Question first I had for UNR on intercollegiate athletics was the that it's a deficit of $9.2 million, and it gives the reasons for it. I'm echoing.
Thanks.
A ticket shortfall of $799,000, a budget cut of $219,000, an NCAA distribution cut of $812,000. That adds up to less than $2 million of the $9 million, and it also says a fundraising shortfall. Was the fundraising shortfall $7 million?
This is Mark Johnson again. I will address that. That number, 9.248 million in the briefing paper, is actually the number of the sum of all three of our fiscal exceptions, whereas athletics is just a 2.1 million. And I say just, but all of that's COVID related. It includes the budget reduction they took. The fact that the NCAA did not have a March Madness this year, we lost almost $1 million in a direct distribution from NCAA. And also, since we don't have any ticket sales for football this fall, because there will not be any fans in the stadium. So all of these shortfalls this year have to do with COVID.
Okay, but as I'm reading, it says intercollegiate athletics reported a deficit of $9.2 million. That's what the sentence is. It doesn't say all of our fiscal exceptions added up to $9.2 million. That sentence is
if you look down below on page three on the table itself, you'll see that UNR has three amounts which add up to $9.2 million. So I think it was just a mistake in the briefing paper reporting.
Okay. Okay.
So the one on athletics is 2.1 million.
Okay. And then while I've got you, I'll skip ahead real quick. I noticed that, and we'll be talking later about the med school practice plan, but I noticed UNLV has a fiscal exception report again, as they have, and the UNR School of Medicine does not have one. Does that mean your practice plan has been running even or ahead? And I don't recall seeing it for the last couple of meetings.
Yes, that's correct.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else have any questions for President Johnson while we've got him?
I do. Thank you, Chair Hayes. President Johnson, on the $2 million deficit in athletics and COVID-related, what's the plan going forward since it's not going to improve and you're not going to have any of that revenue that you haven't had in the past?
That's right. This is a very uncertain year, so we're not having any fall sports. But the Mountain West talks on a weekly basis about preparing to have fall sports move to spring and how many games we'll have. So we may have ticket sales in the spring, but if we don't have fans in the stands, there will be no ticket sales for the fall sports. We could have some revenues coming in from media contracts, but we'll also be short of media contracts if we don't have a season at all. So this is an extremely uncertain period. This is going to be a miserable year, and I think you will see the for this year the deficits increase through time here. We have a repayment plan written such that when we get back to normal, one-third of the new media rights contract, which will only go into effect when we actually play games, one-third of that media contract gain will go to debt, accumulated debt, and we will use our cash management plan to carry this debt for a while with the athletics responsible to covering it over time.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up. Thank you for that explanation. The only problem is whether you have fans in the stands or not, there's deficits all the time anyway, right? So it's just a magnitude of those deficits. So is there any plan in place from an expense reduction perspective?
Yes. In fact, there was about a $2 million expense reduction. This year, we've already laid off 20 employees from athletics because they're game day type people. And since we're not having game day this fall, those people will go off. They've been given their 60-day notice. And we are holding some of those cost reductions continuous into the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Carballo, did you have any questions?
Thank you, Chair. My question is for the College of Southern Nevada. If Dr. Zaragoza is, President Zaragoza is on the call, or somebody from CSN, the report explains that there are options that CSN is looking into regarding partnerships or collaborations with other NC institutions or partnering with an external nonprofit entity. Has there been any work on that done yet? Do you have a status report on that option?
Sonia, do you want to go ahead and follow up? In response to the question, Regent Carvalho, we've actually done three things in terms of the dental family practice operation. You know, one of them, and we'll be reporting in the audit committee, is we've addressed the procedural issues that were addressed in the audit. The second part is we've actually stopped the bleeding. I think we're beginning to see kind of the right trending in terms of expenses, even in this COVID environment. But the long-term discussions for us is a recognition that the model itself can be enhanced, and the preferred model would be a partnership or an integrated approach with one of our sister institutions. And we've reached out to UNLV, and we will be having a discussion shortly on that very matter. So this is kind of work going forward to stabilize the long-term sustainability of the model. This could be a win-win for the community. It could be a win-win for UNLV as well as for CSN students. So we're pursuing kind of that multi-pronged approach to address the issues. And I know Sonia's on the line, too. I don't know if Sonia wants to add to that.
Yes, and thank you very much for that question. So to answer directly, yes, we have continued to
I'm sorry, can you identify yourself for the record? So just
yes, I'm sorry. This is Sonia Pearson, Provost for the record for the College of Southern Nevada. Thank you very much, Chair Hayes. I apologize for that. But to follow up on the inquiry, yes, we have continued our communication with external partners, such as Clark County Social Services, Accessible Space Incorporated, that is a nonprofit entity that actually is housed at the Charleston campus. But more importantly, we're very excited about our move forward plan to have broader discussions with UNLV in terms of how we can partner and align our model with best practice models across the country.
Thank you. Does that address your concerns, Regent Carballo?
Yes, I do have one follow-up question, if that's all right.
Of course.
Also, have you hired the practice manager yet, or are you still reviewing that position for hire?
Thank you again for that question, Sonia Pearson, for the record. We have identified a candidate for that position, so we're finalizing the process. However, as Dr. Zaragoza has pointed out, we maintain some good traction with our collection activities, even in the absence of that position. So we do believe we're moving in the right direction.
Thank you.
Thank you. It sounds like that is the case. I look forward to hearing about with UNLV. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I too look forward to hearing that. I mean, I think Dr. Zaragoza touched on it. The model isn't working. As I understand it, we're one of the few that actually has a dental hygiene practice plan, where most dental hygiene schools have the students go out into the field and work under a dentist, if I understand correctly. And this model, while has been called the Cadillac of models, I don't see that other states are having a problem with poorly trained hygienists and bad hygiene because their hygienists are trained in the different model. So if we can find having this great model we have and adapt it by partnering with the county, UNLV, or someone else, I think that would be outstanding. But if not, I think it's enough time in the red that we really need to look at doing what the rest of the country is doing. So, but thank you so much for addressing this and stemming the flow of the blood. So the next questions I had were for UNLV. Going back to the intercollegiate athletics from UNR, they have something in the fiscal exception report. I do not see anything from UNLV, and I find it hard to believe that with the loss of ticket sales, the scholarships that come with ticket sales, the loss of media, the loss of NCAA distributions, that UNLV is not having similar difficulties. Is there someone from UNLV that can address why, what maybe they've taken better expense reduction measures? I don't know, but how is UNLV not listing intercollegiate athletics on its fiscal exceptions report?
Hi, Regent Hayes. This is Keith Whitfield, president of UNLV, for the record.
Welcome, Dr. Whitfield. This is your first time in our committee. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. And I left my camera off because of broadband issues, but I'm definitely here. I'm wondering if Jean Vock is actually on. I don't see her picture there.
I'm here.
She is.
I'm here.
And let me just say just one or two words, and then I'll leave the rest up to her. Because I am still going to claim being a new person, trying to get my head around everything. But there are plans for some personnel reductions in sports to be done. I just don't think that they've been carried out just yet. So I'll leave the rest of that discussion to Jean.
Thank you, President Whitfield and Chair Hayes. And for the record, Jean Bach from UNLV, I'm the Chief Financial Officer. As far as athletics, we have not yet demonstrated a cash deficit. I don't have all the details specific, but I can certainly ask Athletic Director Desiree Francois-Reed to provide some specifics, but we do not have a cash balance as of June 30.
Great. Okay.
Yeah. Now, that does, but I will clarify, you know, this next fiscal year is going to be particularly challenging.
It'd have to be. Thanks. I appreciate that. And Dr. Whitfield, I'll tell you what they told me. They let me get away with saying I'm the new guy for one meeting, and then they told me I couldn't say that anymore. So I'll give you today and tomorrow. And then the other question I have for UNLV is the practice plan. I get that every medical facility in the country, really, for the second quarter, or I guess the end of the first, from March through May, had almost no one coming in to visit unless it was extremely emergent. So that adds to the problems. But this is just an ongoing issue, and I don't know how we get this off of the fiscal exception report. I understand the argument that accounts receivable lag a little bit, but there has to be a point where we're not sitting there hoping on accounts receivable to make things up. Is there a long-term plan to get you off of this report?
Would you like me to address that, Dr. Whitfield? Yes. Thank you. Again, for the record, Jean Bach from UNLV, and I'm the CFO. As you're aware, this has been on the fiscal exception reports over time, and there's two reasons. One of the reasons is that some of these are always billed in arrears. They're billed, and that's particularly related to the GMB programs. As far as the faculty practice plan, we also bill, our goal is to get to the point where we settle up by each quarter. And we had actually, the billing and procedural issues, the practice plan continues to make significant progress on improving those. And at each of the meetings, you know, they've demonstrated increased progress. The cash deficit had improved to really just about 1 month of expenses through this year, with the goal of being pretty close by the end of either this fiscal year or at least the end of calendar 2020. Of course, the pandemic has resulted in some further complications. We've had slow claim processing by Medicare, and insurance is all related to the pandemic. So it will, we are continuing to work through all of those improvement efforts, and we have made significant progress, but the pandemic did result in some further challenges. I'll stop there, but if you want further details, I believe that both Dr. Khan and the CFO for the medical school, Joanne Strobe, are on. Would you like them to add further comments?
I think so, because one of the things that we have been told in the past was Epic would be up and running, and that would speed things up. Because, you know, as I understand, if you within about 7 days submit your bill to the payer, most payers are going to pay you in a 15 to 30 day window. You know, some of them a little quicker than others. So the lag shouldn't usually even be a full month. So I don't know if Dr. Khan or someone there would want to address, is Epic up and running? As I understand, it was supposed to be up and running earlier this year. Is it working? And the explanation we've been given many times is that all of these electronic billing for medical software systems are not good, and Epic is the best of the not good. But is that working? Are we seeing an increase in getting our bills out and getting them paid?
Certainly. And I'll just add, I see Joanne's picture. I don't know if Joanne or Dr. Khan want to add further, but yes, Epic is up and running. And with any system implementation, you start out with challenges, and they have made progress in reducing the time from the time of service to the time of billing. So as I said, they made significant progress in reducing that time lag. Joanne or her team have some specific details, but there were some delays in processing the claims by Medicare, Medicare, and insurance related to the coronavirus pandemic. Joanne, did you want to add to that?
This is Joanne Strobe, CFO of the School of Medicine and the practice plan. We have experienced some delays from insurance carriers on even after we've invoiced them, Regent Hayes, and we've submitted our audited our financial statements, and they're in the process of being reviewed. As you know, last year we had over a $6 million deficit, and this year we reduced that deficit, even with the pandemic, to under $2 million. And our budget for the current year is to really break even. So we've made some really significant efforts in decreasing our deficit and getting into a positive financial position for the practice plan. And we do believe that we'll be able to achieve that even with the pandemic.
Great, thank you.
But our accounts receivable has slowed down from insurance carriers. There's no doubt about that.
Is that COVID related?
Yes, we believe so. And we can certainly provide details if you would like that information.
Any other questions of the med school from the committee?
Chair Hayes, quick question. How about the line of credit that went away and a payback plan for that?
This is Jean Bach for the record, CFO for UNLV. The line of credit that was extended to the UNLV Medicine was established at the time it was established in July of 2017. I believe we established up to $19 million as the line of credit. They ended up drawing about $15 million, and payments are being made on that. We have a bank loan that has a five-year repayment, but between the university and the practice plan, we have negotiated a longer period so that they can extend the time period. So we're backfilling it to a certain extent from UNLV, but it is still a liability on the records of the UNLV Medicine. And they have a payment plan to repay UNLV. The line of credit is established between UNLV and the bank, not between the practice plan and the bank, because they were not yet established. So they pay us and we pay the bank. So UNLV are paying the bank loan in the 5-year time frame, and UNLV Medicine is paying UNLV back over a 10-year time frame.
Okay. And just as a follow-up then, has that payment from the School of Medicine back to UNLV, has that started, or does that start some period in the future?
We set up at payment terms that they could defer that until their first 3 years of operation. I don't have the agreement right in front of me, but I can give you the specifics. I believe the first payment will be due in January 2022. Joanne, can you confirm that? Or else I can look up the number, the date, and give it to you.
No, I don't need to. I'm just more curious, right? Because I just want to make sure, because you talk about breaking even, and then you'll still have that payment plan that's out there. So I was just curious, would they break it even? Did it include the payback? But that's going to be sometime in the future.
So let me clarify, the payback is, you know, that affects your assets and liabilities, not the revenues and expense. So the break even is on the revenues and expense of a given year. And so the payback is a loan repayment. And so they, help them manage cash flow while they built up really from the ground up, we agreed to that we would give them an extended period of time to begin the payback to UNLV. And we expect by those first 3 years, we anticipated that cash flows would be a challenge, as any startup has. And then starting in year four, we're asking them to begin the payback.
Okay. So two quick comments. One, no, I'm well aware of assets, liabilities, revenue, and all that. The second part, it's not really a startup, I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, you took over the practice plan from UNR, and it started at zero. So it's not, I know a lot of times they want to kind of classify it as a startup, but it's not really a startup.
Yeah, and thank you for the clarification, Regent Page. That probably was not the correct word, but it was it was under new management and with a lot of changes. So it was a pretty significant organizational and operational change.
Sure. And then also for the record, everything was zero. They're out, right? So any of the liabilities, so they started at zero, right? There was no deficit when they took it over. UNR took whatever deficit was outstanding. Is that a fair statement?
There was a detailed distribution of the financial records at the time, correct?
Right. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ms. Vock, I'm just want to make sure I understand. So the bank loan, the $15 million was taken out against, you said UNLV itself and the practice plan were paying it back. But then it sounded later like you were saying UNLV is paying it back for the first 3 years and the practice plan is not contributing to that. Yeah. Allow
me to clarify. The bank loan is the bank loan is between UNLV and the bank. UNLV is paying that, making those payments over the 5 year period of the agreement. Our agreement with UNLV Medicine to pay back UNLV for the practice plan to pay back UNLV, we scheduled a 10-year payback period, and we've given them a delay on starting up on the repayment to alleviate cash flow management. So we have two separate agreements between UNLV and the bank and between the practice plan and UNLV.
So this lessening the deficit by $300,000 next year, I guess, would next year be year three? Yeah. So when they start mm-hmm. having to pay UNLV back, how big of a chunk is that going to be annually?
I can pull up the agreement. I believe it's, and Joanne Strobe might have records. I believe it's $1.5 million annually over the 10-year period. And we did agree, UNLV did agree as a strategic investment to basically forgive one of the payments, because we had intended to start that sooner, but the pandemic was a significant impact on the practice plan. And so we just recently agreed to forgive one payment, and we will evaluate that further, whether or not that's an appropriate strategic investment.
So had that $1.5 million been paid this year, it would have been a $1.2 million deficit instead of decreasing the deficit by $300,000. And going back to what Regent Page said, we started at zero, took out a $15 million loan, and aren't even paying that loan back. It's still, there's a lot of work to be done in this practice plan. I mean, you can show them, there's some improvement, great, but when we got a $1.5 million loan out there.
I agree that additional work is needed, and I believe that the practice plan is actively working towards that and making improvements each year. We are actively involved with the practice plan board and the committees at UNLV. And again, Joanne Strobe or others may want to add further comments there. But you're right. If the loss would have been greater, the loss of their on the financial statements, the loss would have been greater. It would not have changed the fiscal exception report, though.
I noticed that I got an alert that Regent Page had left the meeting. Is that accurate, Regent Page? Are you there? I'm looking through the list of people. That would put us without a quorum. Mr. Wixom, if you're on the phone, I do believe I have the authority to deputize another regent to join the committee to make quorum. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair Hayes, you do.
Great. I see that Regent Geddes, did you just leave? Did you just hide from me? Your picture vanished. Regent Geddes, are you there?
I am here. My video is dragging a bit, but I am here.
Okay. I would like to deputize you to join the committee if you would be so inclined and so kind to join us.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We do have a quorum. All right. If there's no more questions on the fiscal exceptions report, that was for information only. We'll move on to item number four, fourth quarter fiscal year 2019-2020. Budget transfer, state-supported or self-supporting operating budgets. Mr. Klinger, do you have something to present to us on this?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Andrew Klinger, CFO, I do not. There were no transfers made, so nothing to report.
Thank you. The next item I will point out is also for information only, item number 5, public-private partnership, P3 development, Nevada State College. It's for information only. President Patterson, talk to us about what your plans are.
Well, thank you, Chair Hayes and members of the committee. Bart Patterson, president at Nevada State College. And one of the critical things that I want to do in this last year of my term is to start to focus on some non-state revenue sources that can really build the foundation for the college having additional resources to expand its physical facilities and programs without relying on state support. So obviously one of the key assets that we have is land, and we've been thinking about this a long time about how we could approach this. And so I wanted Vice President Butler to share with the board kind of some of the things that we're thinking about and how they could come to the board in different ways over the next few months. Thank you, Vice President Butler.
All right, did you give me a promotion there for a second? That's good. Thanks. thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Kevin Butler, Nevada State College. As President Patterson indicated, one of the things that we learned, particularly coming out of this COVID whole deal, is that the college really needs to start looking at secondary streams of revenue. And so one of the things that we're doing is we're starting to build out our self-supporting programs through workforce development and even degree completion. But another way, as Bart had indicated, was that we need to start looking at our real property assets and figure out how we can better leverage those. And I know that the newly formed committee on budget reduction, one potential area that they may be discussing relates to how to better use our monetizing our campus land. So we're really waiting with bated breath to hear the outcomes of those discussions. So I know most of you know that we've got a lot of land out at Nevada State. Our campus master planning has identified between 170 to 250 acres that could potentially be used for P3 public-private partnership types of projects. And there are a tremendous amount of opportunities that are out there that would enable us to monetize these assets while at the same time expanding and enhancing the educational services of the college. For example, you know, some of the more favorable projects will likely have, they'll definitely have some form of academic synergy, but they may offer internships, student engagement, post-employment, or post-graduation employment opportunities for our students. They'll likely have some shared space because we have like a space need, and we need all sorts of infrastructure support as well. So a good project would include those opportunities. There might even be shared services depending on the type of business that we partner with. But to be effective in this, the college really needs to establish a framework so that we can adequately and more importantly, timely assess and engage these P3 opportunities. So our student housing project, our first P3 project, is going to bring in a considerable amount of resources to the college. But that project is taken nearly 6 years to complete, and we're probably 4 years before we got it approved. So most of the partners that we're talking with right now, potential partners, are going to be looking at significantly faster time schedules. I mean, some of them want to get in the dirt as little as 6 to 18 months from starting some of these conversations. So we've been looking at a few different P3 processes that are out in ENCHI right now. And we're really kind of fixated a lot on the DRI research parks model. And we think that model, if something similar were adopted by the college, could satisfy region oversight of these types of projects, but more importantly, provide us a timely mechanism to assess and implement these projects. We've had a number of conversations. I see Mike's on the line. We've had a number of conversations with Mike Wixom, who's currently the NC third-party real estate counsel, to discuss critical elements that a framework for managing P3 opportunities might contain. At Mike's suggestion, the college will soon be reaching out to community partners, community leaders, to start to have the conversation about what types of projects really have a better fit for the Nevada State campus, as well as talking about best practices and attributes that a managing body for these P3 projects might contain. In the meantime, the college continues to have some pretty exciting opportunities come forward. And we may need to bring one or two of these projects to the board in the more traditional, but hopefully more expedited pathway, so that we can take advantage and engage these P3 projects a little bit earlier, you know, before we can actually get a formalized structure in place. So that could be as early as the next 30 to 60 days, depending upon how things start to develop. Rest assured that the college will continue to collaborate with NC Legal. We'll be keeping the chancellor and the board chair fully informed as we develop any pertinent documents, including MOUs, ground leases, development agreements, or any other required documentation that the project may require. Just wanted to make the committee aware that we're really focusing in on this area. We think there's a tremendous potential for the college, significant value in the lands that are out here. And I know I see Bart still on the line. He and I are here to entertain any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. So, President Patterson, I guess I just want to get a sense of Would you want this on the agenda just to make us aware of these? This is a direction you're going. Were you looking for some feedback or guidance from us? I mean, there's not a lot here for us, I think, to give guidance on, other than whether we're in favor of, I guess, or not, of doing public-private partnerships. And I think that's a direction that I'm certainly in favor of in the right circumstances. But is there something else you're looking for from us, or just kind of giving us an idea of, this is the direction you see the school needs to go because of, I mean, what looks like a long-term revenue issue that, you know, states around the country are getting revenue cut from their legislatures, and, you know, tuition can only go so high, and so you've got to find a new source of revenue. So if you have any thoughts about what you're looking for from us, or if you just wanted to let us know which direction you were going, that's fine as well.
Well, Chair Hayes, I think you recapped it pretty well, and the primary objective was just to give awareness of the kind of direction we're going, but maybe just a little bit more context will maybe explain why it's significant. So, as we've thought about trying to develop this parcel over the last several years, we've thought about different directions that we could go, and obviously I have a background in the system of almost 20 years, so I've seen a lot of what institutions have tried to do and where that's been successful or maybe where it hasn't. What we've wanted to avoid, or my primary objective, I have not wanted to lock up the parcel under one developer for some appreciable time period. I just think that's not the right approach. It doesn't create the flexibility you need. And so I'm reluctant, and I've been reluctant to go down that road. At the same time, coming forward with individual projects, irrespective of their scope, every time there is an individual project is pretty enormous and time-consuming undertaking. And so that's where we started to explore, well, what about a concept where we can create something like, I mean, we're not intending to open a research park. That wasn't why we're referencing the DRI research parks, but more the structure of DRI research parks, which the board approved, which kind of gives a combination of flexibility and region oversight at the same time. So I just wanted to make the committee aware that we're really looking at that and will likely develop a form of structure and come back to the board at a later time in order to get that approved. And then as we've continued, you know, to struggle in this fiscal kind of situation, I've become a little more urgent about potentially pushing forward some individual projects as well as they come to us that are really attractive. And so we're certainly aware, for example, of the way that the stadium project for UNLV originally was proposed, which came through a non-binding MOU that gave an opportunity for that particular developer to deliver in a sort of a 1 to 2 year time period. That was a little bit maybe more urgent project from the standpoint of danger in locking up a portion of the property, because it was such a critical conversation. But those are the kinds of things that we may look at doing if we have the right project to come forward to the board to at least get the approval to negotiate a deal, an individual deal. So it's kind of a combination, but I just wanted the board to have that context, because not all of you, I know, have been familiar with these discussions over, say, the last particularly 10 years.
Great. Thanks, President Patterson. Do you have any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. Regent Geddes.
Thank you. Just a couple there. Bart, have you found anybody interested in building a water tank? Okay, that's no.
Seriously, Regent Geddes, if I might, Kevin Butler, Nevada State, to be able to define and to present a continuous revenue stream gives us the ability to bond for exactly those sorts of projects. And so I think it's very important that if we're engaging in these and we can actually show that stream of revenue is reliable, that we can start to help ourselves in a lot of different ways.
And I assume it would be needed for full development to the 250.
It may even be so, yes. They might even help to build that, or we could look at refunding agreements or something else like that if they choose to put up that infrastructure for us and want to get some revenue back from other participants that come in later.
Thanks. And then, Bart, I think you said it, but I want to make sure it's clear. You don't have any P3 developer specific. You're identifying the land. You want to start moving on projects, but it could be multiple developers on different projects based on what they want to do in that area, correct?
That's correct. I want a more open environment for opportunities to develop and not just assign it over to one developer to control the parcel for any appreciable time. Yes.
Thanks. And you may want to, just going back to the DRA Research Park, may want to look at having a P3 committee team or a P3 foundation, in essence, where you can get expertise from the community, and they're sitting there and helping you vet those projects before they get to a point of coming to us.
Great idea. Thank you.
And the last point, Mr. Chair, is I just want to make sure the 250 acres you've identified is what are the restrictions based on how the land was conveyed to Nevada State College? And although, are you looking to change those restrictions globally? Did we have that in the federal legislation that was going through, or would it be on a use-specific project? Or are you looking for a wide range of uses that you'll try to get acceptable approval for so it doesn't have to keep going back?
Yeah, great question, Regent Geddes. We're very familiar with what the restrictions are currently. There has been discussion of a federal lands bill or federal approach to clarifying the scope of not just our parcel, in fact, UNLV's parcel and CSN's parcel. So I think getting movement on that legislation at some point, once Congress starts, we hope, moving more collaboratively down the road, that will certainly help in expanding the scope of the project. So for now, we would only look at projects that we think clearly meet the letter of the current land use, which is to create that you know, critical academic synergy. So it's the type of project that would be paired with a college campus, which is the way the language is currently structured. But yeah, it's a good observation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. Vice Chair Carvalho, did you have anything?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that there is a lot of development already happening around Nevada State, particularly residential, and there's also land that's owned by the city of Henderson in that same area. Are you collaborating with the city of Henderson so that the future development is cohesive? Since this area is being developed in a residential type of fashion, obviously that limits some of the uses of land in the future, I would imagine. But also to keep that in mind so that your residential neighbors are also pleased with what's happening in the area as well, and to also allow for their input into what may be developed on the parcel. So just a few comments that I felt were, you know, important to voice. Thank you.
Yeah, if I could just reference that, Chair Hayes, and obviously we have a college area plan that's been approved through a full kind of zoning process. Any modifications that we would make to that would have to go back through a process. And, you know, the city's approach has largely been to try to increase the rooftops in the area and watch the college's expansion, which has been dramatic. Because that college, the city ground in the front of the college, they have about 120 acres total, really is also some prime development opportunity. But we work really closely with the city on discussions about how to best develop that parcel. I mean, it's the gateway to the college, honestly, is the city parcel. And they're very aware of that. And so they want to make sure that what they put in that spot is really conducive to an entry to a college. But absolutely, you know, we would end up working with the neighborhoods depending on the type of project. Thus far, we haven't really done any projects that abut the neighborhoods directly. Obviously, that'll be the greatest concern as we move forward, but your points are all well taken and have to be considered, because we want to be a good partner in the neighborhood. And a lot of neighbors are excited about what's happening at the college. We haven't had a lot of, I would say, pushback, really any of like folks concerned about the college developments that are happening. So I think the neighborhood's starting to view us as being long-term a really great partner and a resource to have in the vicinity. But we have to maintain those relationships. Thank you.
Great. Any questions from anyone else in the committee or any other regents that are in the meeting? If not, good luck to you, President Patterson. Look forward to seeing this come forward in the future. Well, I got one more meeting in the future, and you don't have many more either, so maybe I won't see it. But thanks for looking forward and trying to find solutions rather than sitting and bemoaning the situation. I appreciate it. We'll move on to item number 6, new business. Do we have any new business? I will just bring up the fiscal exceptions report we've talked about for a while. Next meeting is my last meeting. If we have a revamped structure for that I could leave behind for the next committee and the next chairwoman, that would be fantastic. That's all the new business I have. We'll move on to item number 7, public comment. Do we have any public comment that's come in during the meeting?
No, there is no more.
No more public comment, then we will adjourn. Thank you all.